And I'd like now to welcome to the program Jeff Halper. He is an Israeli professor of anthropology, and he's coordinator of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. He will be in Albuquerque this weekend speaking at the Friends of Sabil conference. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me on.
So how did you get involved with the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict so actively?
Well, I'm a child of the 60s in the States. I grew up in Minnesota. I was very active in the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement. And then I moved to Israel about 40 years ago for all kinds of reasons we don't have to get into now. And, when I went to Israel, I went with my eyes open. I knew there was an occupation. And, back in those days, we didn't have the word global like they have today. So the word we used in the 60s was the revolution. The revolution will happen wherever. And so in a sense, going to Israel, I was going to another front in the revolution. So I'm committed to living in Israel. I mean, I've lived there all these years. I have a family there. But I'm also committed to ending the occupation and to achieving a just peace with Palestinians, which is crucial for any kind of Israeli existence, even morally, if not only physically.
The very term Israeli-Palestinian conflict suggests a kind of balance where there's not a balance. Describe for our listeners the nature of the power imbalance between these two groups.
Well, that's a very important point, because we're always saying that there is no symmetry here, because people like to talk about both sides. Both sides should negotiate, both sides should end the violence, but there isn't both sides. One country, Israel, is an occupying power over another people, the Palestinians, who are reduced to occupied territories in only 22% of historic Palestine. There's a tremendous power differential. I mean, Israel's a state in the United Nations, a member of the United Nations. The Palestinians have no state. And Israel has an economy three times larger than Palestine, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon put together. And, of course, Israel has one of the most powerful armies in the world. It's the fourth largest nuclear power and has never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, does not allow international inspections. It's the fourth largest arms exporter in the world. It exports more arms than China or Britain does. And it's an occupying power. So from that point of view, even though, of course, Palestinians have responsibilities, the lion's share of the burden of resolving this conflict rests with Israel, because Israel's in control. And only by giving up control and really by seeking a just peace are we going to get out of this mess that we're in.
How much of Israel's economic base and power is based on U.S. funding?
It's not so much U.S. funding. I mean, first of all, the largest Israeli economy is something, industry is something that no one would ever guess, and it's diamonds.
Really?
A third of the Israeli economy has to do with refining and distributing and cutting of diamonds. And then you have arms exports, and then you have homeland security export. So that those are very almost recession-proof foundations of an economy. The worse things get, the more people want diamonds and arms and security devices. So it isn't so much, I mean, there is a very important American component. You know, the United States gives Israel close to $4 billion a year in military aid. But more important is the access, the privileged access that the United States gives Israel to its military technology. That's what gives Israel the competitive edge in the market. And that's why Israel can develop all kinds of very sophisticated high-tech weapons, both weapons for the military and weapons for police and homeland security, that make it a very powerful military force. So what Israel contributes is its high-tech expertise and its experience with the Palestinians. If you look at the occupied territories as a laboratory, Israel takes what it learns from controlling and suppressing and pacifying the Palestinians for the last 45 years, and that's one of its major exports. And that ties in then with the American military industrial complex, you know, with the military developments in the United States, because the United States has got to make the turn from interstate warfare, like warfare with the Soviet Union, to what's called counterinsurgency, asymmetrical warfare, and low-intensity warfare, and so on. And Israel's the expert at that. So it's the combination of Israeli expertise and experience with American, not just funding, but like I say, access to American military technology that makes Israel so powerful.
So the United States is actually taking knowledge that Israel is teaching them on how to keep, for example, a people in one area or expelling people from one area to another or whatever, and using that ourselves toward other people?
Of course. First of all, the drones, the famous drones, the UAVs, the unmanned aerial aircraft that are used in Afghanistan, for example, and now that are being imported by American police forces, are mainly Israeli technology. There's an American drone, but it's the drone technology. Israel's the world's leader in drone technology, and also the high-tech surveillance and even targeting, even the military parts of drones. The United States, Israel trains American police forces. I'm sure the Santa Fe Police Department, if anybody would ask, has undergone training in Israel by the Israeli police. Israel, it's well known, has taken over a lot of the security at American airports. I mean, LAX is almost run by Israeli kind of homeland security stuff. And, of course, in terms of counterinsurgency, helping the United States in Kurdistan that isn't very well known, certainly in Afghanistan, in all the covert warfare things, Israel is very active. So the United States, yeah, I mean, it's not that the United States can't develop technology. But, you know, the Pentagon is like this huge oil tanker. You know, it's committed to F-35s, the next generation of fighter aircraft that nobody needs, and nuclear submarines, and a huge military, whereas Israel is this little tugboat that's trying to turn this oil tanker in terms of high-tech but sort of lower-force counterinsurgency. You know, today the new paradigm of warfare that the military talk about is warfare amongst the people, you know, resource wars. The famous American bumper sticker that everybody's seen, how did our oil get under their sand? And right. In all of that kind of warfare amongst the people, Israel, with its experience with the Palestinians, is absolutely the leading force and is able to help the United States to make that turn into this new kind of warfare.
So that explains a lot about the alliance between the United States and Israel. I mean, it's not just about getting votes in Florida.
Exactly. And that's the point. You know, Kissinger, our friend Kissinger, used to say that countries don't have friends. They have interests. And you know, I've been trying to ask myself, why does the United States have this commitment to Israel? Because it's counterproductive to American interests. It alienates the entire Muslim world. You know, the occupation is seen not as an Israeli occupation, but as an American-Israeli occupation. It's clear Israel couldn't maintain its control of the Palestinians for a month without American military, political, and financial support, which alienates it from a very strategic Muslim world stretching from Nigeria to Indonesia. And the question is, why? Why would the United States do that? And the only real big reason I can come to, you know, they talk about Israel's helps in the fight against terrorism. Well, in fact, Israel inflames terrorism, especially against the United States. They talk about, you know, common moral values and we're both democracies and all that, but that countries don't run their foreign policies on that. The big elephant in the room that we're not talking about, that we should be, is the military cooperation. As the United States is really beginning to be the power in the world that in a sense, I'll put it in a kind of a radicalish way, is the power pushing this very aggressive neoliberal capitalism that in a world of scarce resources has got to get into wars with third world countries all over the world And as you get into the 99%, 1% equation back home, it has to be prepared to control working class people, minorities, immigrants, dissidents, and others that will find nothing, no future in that kind of a society. And from that point of view, I think Israel provides that. It provides the military outreach in terms of counterinsurgency tactics and weaponry, and it also provides tactics and weaponry that it's learned on Palestinians in Gaza and Jenin and other places to train American police forces. So what I try to tell American audiences is don't think that this technology ends in Gaza and the Palestinians are suffering. It comes right into Santa Fe, right through your police department, and it's there. You simply, you know, aren't aware of it yet.
Right. We're talking to professor and activist Jeff Halper. So let's talk about land for a moment. You have a situation where Palestinians represent approximately 50% of the population of this region, Israel and the occupied territories, and they're living on an ever-shrinking amount of land, a tiny fraction of the total land at this point. What does Israel, I mean, they're not stupid, they've got a plan. What do they think is going to happen if they take away all their land? Where do they think these people are going to go?
Well, wherever they go is fine. Just so they go, first of all.
Do they think they're really going to go?
Well, the middle classes are going. The middle class, the Palestinian middle classes, you know, if you're a middle class family and you think there's no future for your children, there's no education, there's no jobs, you can't get housing, Israel's demolished 27,000 homes since 1967. You know, your kids won't even be able to have a home, you leave. And it's true, the poorer people, the masses can't leave. And they're confined to what we call areas A and B of the West Bank, little islands on about 15% of the West Bank, little islands, ghettos, really, in East Jerusalem and Gaza. So that I think Israel's idea is it's beyond apartheid. Apartheid, somehow you get a collaborator, like in South Africa, to agree to a Palestinian Bantustan. You're not going to get a Palestinian leader to agree to that. And so really where Israel's is going is towards what we call warehousing. Like in a prison, you know, the concept warehousing comes out of the American prison system where you get inmates locked away, they're out of sight, out of mind, and that's it. So Israel has pacified the Palestinians, who are living in more than 70 little islands behind a huge wall, twice as high as the Berlin Wall. And now that they've been pacified and quietized, there's no more violence, there's no more terrorism, you don't hear from Palestinians. Now the idea is to shift attention to other things, like Iran, for example. So when last time Netanyahu met with President Obama, he came back to Israel and he was asked, you know, what was the essence of your meeting? And he said the key was that this is the first time an Israeli prime minister has met an American president, and the Palestinian issue wasn't even raised. You see, we've talked about Iran, and then, of
right.
course, you can talk about terrorism. So that's the idea, to warehouse the Palestinians, to shut them away in these little cells, throw away the key, let the UN feed them, completely get them off the front pages of the newspaper, and then turn the world's attention to other things. So in a sense, this is really a test for human rights and international law, you know, because if Israel succeeds, it sends a pretty chilling message to the rest of the world in which, in fact, the capitalist powers would like to do the same thing. They'd like to take their resources and lock them up. You know, two-thirds of humanity, I think, is seen by corporations as surplus humanity. There's nothing to do with them except feed them and warehouse them somewhere. I think the whole continent of Africa is like that. So I think the Israeli experiment with warehousing has its global dimensions. I talk about a global Palestine. But that's the idea, that we can get away, we can warehouse them, shut them up, make them disappear, and the world will go on to other agendas.
But the world isn't going on to other agendas, is it? I mean, you tell us, how is the world responding? The Arab world, Europe, the United States, everybody.
Well, you know, I think it's true, and this is what we've been working on all these years, is to get the Palestinian issue, what I would like to see, and I think we've succeeded, is to get it to the dimensions of the anti-apartheid struggle. And I think all over the world, the Palestinian issue is one of the key issues that people talk about. Churches are now speaking out on divestment and moral BDS, boycotts, divestment, sanctions. You've got TIAA Cref, one of the largest investment and insurance companies in the world, that just divested from Caterpillar. You've got some movement. The problem is that governments are not leading. And governments are going to be the last actor that falls into place. So what we have to do is build a fire under them. It's much easier in Europe and obviously in other parts of the world than it is in the United States. And that's our big problem. As long as Israel has bipartisan support of Congress, it doesn't even care about the president and the administration. Israel feels it's immune from any sanctions and from anything. So let the world moan and cry and whimper and whatever. As long as Congress is in Israel's corner, we're fine. And that's why I think the Albuquerque-Sabile conference is important. All this work to get to the American public, and especially through churches and through unions and through university groups and so on, to try to get them to understand especially how this is really compromising the American position of the world, in addition to the human rights of Palestinians, all this is something that has to be done in order to somehow shift American government policies. But right now, and I don't think Americans are aware of it, right now this conflict is tremendously isolating the United States and the world. You know, when you have a Security Council vote like it was last year on settlements, 14-1 against the United States, in which even Germany, with its history, is voting against the Israeli settlements, and the United States is standing isolated against human rights, I think that isolates the United States in the world to a degree that the American people don't really appreciate. And so it's true. Until we somehow can get the American people or pressure under, to move Congress somehow, it's going to be very hard to get anywhere with this conflict.
We're talking to activist and professor Jeff Halper. The way you frame it, it really starts to sound like democracy versus the military-industrial complex rather than Israel versus Palestine.
That's right. No, for sure. I mean, there's been a lot of work done on what's called transnational capitalism. And in a transnational capital class of the elites. I mean, you know, we're all American, 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 or you're all American, you know, and all this kind of stuff. But the elites in the United States are transnational. They have their country clubs in Switzerland. They have their private clubs in, all over the world. They have their interlocking boards of directors all over so that corporations are loyal to profit. And it's very hard today to have a profit without oppressing the peoples of what's called the periphery of the global system,
exactly.
The poor people of the world. And that's where, that's true, the military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower called it, has its transnational aspects to it.
Very, very interesting. Now, you are Jewish, you are Israeli, you go around the world talking to everybody, including Jewish communities. How do people respond to what you're saying and to your work?
I think if I get a platform, I think they begin to respond because I can lay out an alternative logic, and it makes sense. The problem is, especially for the Jewish community, I have to say that I don't have the access. I mean, I can't get into synagogues. I can't get into the federations. Look at how the Albuquerque Jewish Federation is fighting the Sabeel Conference. And American Jews, you know, they're called, we call them PEPs. PEP means Progressive Except Palestine.
Right.
American Jews are the most liberal of all American groups. But when you hit the Israel-Palestine issue, they become reaction. I mean, they're in coalition with John Hagee and the Christian fundamentalists and people they would never talk to in 100 years on other issues.
Why is that?
I don't know why that is exactly. I think, well, first of all, I don't know if it's true, if it's actually true, because 70% of American Jews are not affiliated with anything in the Jewish community. You know, they're Seinfeld. They're not in a synagogue. They're not in a federation, not in B'nai B'rith or Hadassah. They're simply Americans that happen to be Jews. And I think probably most of them share the same criticisms of Israel that other people have. What the voice you hear is the 30% of what's called the organized Jewish community, the federations and Hillel, that have taken upon themselves to be somehow pro-Israel advocates. And, you know, I don't think their voice is representative of the American Jewish community, but most American Jews are in the woodwork, so it's hard to, they're not speaking out in an alternative voice. But I would submit that the voice of AIPAC and the voice of these organized Jewish groups are extreme voices at the service of a foreign government. That's something that people, that's a weird kind of a thing, how Israel has somehow become a domestic issue. You know, there's an organization called Friends of the IDF, of the Israel Defense Forces, of the Israel Army, that are a charity, a tax-exempt charity in the United
right.
States.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can give to a foreign army, the Israeli army, and get a tax exemption. That's a weird situation that it's hard to explain how that came about.
Is there a generation gap? Are younger people just as anti-Palestinian as their parents and grandparents?
Well, the research indicates no. That, in fact, young American Jews have kind of turned off on Israel. And that's why I think, in kind of in desperation, this birthright program has been born, where every young Jewish kid from the age, I think, of 17 to 23 can get a fully paid 2-week brainwashing tour of Israel. But never, and, you know, so you have the pro-Israel lobbyists on campus and so on, but I think they're isolated. I think more and more American young people are beginning to think in terms of human rights. I think that's starting to gain ground in the United States. And it's very hard to defend Israeli policies. I mean, it has nothing to do with terrorism or Israel. You know, the Israeli occupation is something that can't be hidden. And I think American Jewish kids are on to that. So that doesn't mean that they're necessarily joining with the Palestinians, but I don't think they're the pro-Israel activists that their parents might have been.
What is the Sabeel Conference all about?
Well, Sabeel, we've worked with Sabeel for years. It's a Palestinian Christian liberation theology organization. Sabeel provides a very important moral voice in Christian terms about the conflict, and are trying very hard to get churches to respond to the moral issues, and even presenting human rights as a form of a moral issue in a way that they're hesitant to do. So I think this is my 40th Sabeel conference in the United States. You know, and they're held in churches or in college campuses, very good speakers, Palestinians, a lot of Jews, American Jews, Israeli Jews participate, plus a lot of other people. There's talks, and then there's also workshops. So Sabeel is a wonderful way of getting exposed to a critical voice on Israel-Palestine, especially through hearing Israelis, Israeli Jews, and Palestinians.
The Sabeel Conference is happening this weekend, the 28th and 29th of September in Albuquerque. And for more information, people can go to fosna.org, F-O-S-N-A, www.jeffhalper.org, and you will be speaking there, and a number of other terrific speakers are going to be in Albuquerque this weekend.
No, that's right. There's really, I mean, it's the top line of speakers on this topic. And so I think what's really good about Seville is it's not simply haranguing. It's not, it really is intellectual. I mean, it has a religious element. I'm not religious at all. So that's one element, trying to get to churches. But on the other hand, trying to bring out a critical voice of human rights and peace. One of the messages being, by all of us being together, is that we refuse to be enemies.
Yeah.
Israelis and Palestinians refuse to be enemies, and you, governments or organizations, whoever you are, that are trying to make us enemies, will not succeed.
Jeff Halper is an Israeli professor of anthropology, and he's coordinator of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Okay, thanks for having me on.